would say humbling. I had tears in my eyes when I walked in. It was just overwhelming to think about what they had been through for 2,000 miles, all those months, not enough food, not enough water, walking through the desert, all of the uncertainty that they had to go through that whole time. And to know that they did arrive, and for the most part, they arrived safely, and that they'd completed the task that they were given to do.
In part one of Old Town San Diego, you were able to be introduced to some of the reenactor friends that joined us at the end of the trail. And in part two, I thought it might be interesting for you to understand, as they talk about the connections that they felt on that day, why they had those connections and who the people were that they were thinking about as they walked into the plaza that day. And throughout these podcast episodes, we've also mentioned frequently how the desire for doing this is to try to engage the younger generation and those of you who might be interested in learning more about the history to come and share, learn, and even reenact some of these people and stories that you will be listening to in this episode. You can catch a glimpse of how fun it is for these gentlemen to learn about their ancestors and dig deep into history and journals and pull things out and even bump into people like archaeologists who can help them learn and share even more of the things that they're learning about the people they portray.
You know, since then, I have no ancestors. I just was very, very interested in history and more and that. But since then, I have found out I do have a connection in my family. And I'll tell you, I have to tell you that because it's just thrilling. One of the, I found out that my ancestor, my name is Gardner, and my ancestor, my great grandfather's name was Archibald Gardner. He's a Scotsman, joined the church in 1820, but he was converted in Canada in 1845 by a man named John Borum, who's also a fellow Scotsman. And John Borum is a member of the Mormon Battalion.
Oh my goodness.
And so I became John Borum. Whenever I was a member of the Mormon Battalion up at Coloma, I became John Borum from Glasgow, and I learned the brogue. It was wonderful to be a Scotsman. And you, by the way, you have to say Borumen you have to roll your R's when you're talking about the Borumens. And John Borumen, he was my person that I became in the Mormon Battalion. And then I found out that John Borumen, actually he was here in Sacramento. I mean, he was here at Sutter's Fort. There was no Sacramento, of course, then. John Borumen. And I found out that he actually met and talked to and had an opinion about Sam Brannan, who was I also partook. He says, I didn't trust the man. He tried. he went up to Salt Lake. He bought a Doctrine and Covenants. This is in the writings that John Borum had journals. So I was able to read about him and his experiences here. So that's my connection, is that I had the man who converted me.
So Peter has some ancestry that deals with the Mormon Battalion. He had ancestors he didn't even know about. So do you want to tell us briefly about how that came to be, Peter?
I joined the church 22 years ago, and I had no idea about ancestors or anything else. My grandmother was an inactive member. My parents were not active members. After I joined the church, Virginia told me I need to start doing genealogy. I thought, okay, that's okay. I can try that. got a hold of an aunt who kept all the genealogy. My grandma says, oh, we don't have any ancestors in, you know, pioneers. They came out in the train to Salt Lake, and that was all she knew. So I got a hold of the genealogy. In that genealogy, I think $76 worth of Kinko's to copy it all. In that was Moses and Edward Wade, who joined the Mormon Battalion and were assigned to Company C in the battalion. And so it was a revelation to me, knowing that, you know, actually I had some ancestors. And I thought, well, this is kind of cool, because I could actually walk some of the in some of their footsteps as where they went. And so anyway, that's introduction to my my two. Moses's wife Sally stayed in Council Bluffs along with, I know for sure, her daughter Minerva. And as far as we can tell from our records anyway, is Sally passed away in January 1847, when about the time Moses was getting into California.
Wow. So you probably didn't know anything at all about the Mormon Battalion, but now you know quite a bit.
It's funny because I didn't know anything about the Mormon, being, you know, related to people in Mormon Battalion. But my first talk I gave in church, my Virginia says, you ought to talk about the Mormon Battalion. I thought, who? What's that? You know, kind of thing. So I kind of put a really bad talk together and gave that to the church. I think I was doing Pioneer Day or something like that at church. And I, you know, so I got that, through that, and no idea who's there, who they were. Kind of just talked about the basics about what they did and how far they went, all kind of stuff. So it was kind of funny that, you know, I did that. And later on, you know, I've been reenacting Moses and Edward both for the last almost 16 years now.
The original character I came up with was the cook on the ship Brooklyn. Then I got interested in Northern California history and a gentleman by the name of William Brown Ide. Now, William Brown Ide, which I will find out later, I'm related to his wife, was one of the early pioneers, joined the church in Ohio, moved near Nauvoo, was selected to be on the committee to nominate General Joseph Smith to become president of these United States.
1844. Yep.
And I wear a little on my suit. I've got a little coin for that, the political thing. And of course, the prophet or the president to be, supposedly, that was a political assassination. Of course, we in the church say it, you know, that's a little bit differently. About a year later, before the migration, he built a couple of wagons. He had quite a bit of money and he headed west, went to Missouri, got involved with a company there, and went without problems all the way to Fort Hall, there it is. And the other organizer were talked into going to California by this grizzly old guy named Greenwood, who was an old trapper and actually was under the employ of Captain John Sutter. So they'll go down over the Sierras, down into the valley, show up at Sutter's little establishment where he meets Lassen, the old, Danish. He lives at Lassen's property for a while with his wife and children. Lassen kicks him out so his cousin can take it over. He gets in another cabin. And they're there when they find out the Mexicans are coming to chase out all the Anglos. And my confusion always is that land was given to these Americans by Sutter, who supposedly was a Mexican official and a citizen. And I never figured that one out. But they receive a letter. A runner comes through and gives them a letter and says you to gather up at the Buttes, which if you've never been out here, it's the world's smallest mountain range, which actually was a volcano that blew up and there's still rocks all over the place. So they went there and they tried Sutter to convince,
Buttes. Yeah.
Yeah, Sutter Butte, this American fellow named Fremont, who's an officer wandering around Mexican territory. And they say, they're coming, can you help us? And Fremont says, no, I can't help you. So Ide and about 30 of his fellows rode to Sonoma, to the military garrison, which nobody basically was home except for the commander, General Viejo, which you see today is Vallejo, but they pronounce Viejo, put him under arrest and created the California Republic. So I've taken his character on. I've handmade a number of flags that are exact the right size and everything else, and they created the Republic. Now, he was the first known member of the church in California, and he was accused by some of the other guys in that group, he was actually there under orders to Brigham Young to seize California because all the Mormons were coming to California. Well, our friend Jerry knows as portraying the famous, well-known businessman of, you know who he is. Sam Brannon's the guy that I'm thinking of. Well, Sam was told that the Saints are coming west to California.
Let me just tell you this, since it's part of your story, I got to just clarify this. Sam Brannon had a letter, which I, when I was Sam Brannon, I had a letter. I reproduced it in my own handwriting, forging Brigham Young's handwriting, but even his signature looked like it. But the original letter has, they have on record that Sam Brannon had a letter that says, we and 10,000 of our saints will meet you at the San Francisco Bay. That's why Sam Brannon thought that they were all coming out here. And in fact, John Sutter, it's in the records of John Sutter. I talked to somebody there at John's at the Sutter's Fort, and they have something from Pio Pico, who was the governor of California, Alta California, not California, but Alta California. He was the last governor of who lived in Southern California. But he wrote a letter to warning John Sutter that 10,000 Mormons are headed your way. So they thought other people got that word that the Mormons were coming to Sutter's Fort and that part of California. Now, of course, the Saints didn't get this far, but they did get to California. They just got to Salt Lake City, or they got to the area that became Salt Lake City, and it was Alta, California. And a couple months later, it became part of California, part of the United States when after the Mexican War in 48.
Right, when it was taken over. So a lot of members of the church don't realize that Salt Lake Valley was part of Alta, California. And so the Saints did come to California. If you want to irritate an older member of the church in Salt Lake City, you make that statement. Isn't it wonderful? Brigham brought the Saints to California.
Yes.
Because they really get their dander up about that because they don't know their own history.
Yes.
And anyway, so I portrayed President Ide. And in fact, we were at an event in Old Sacramento, and there was an old miner came through with a burro that all the kids loved, and they crawl over the burro, and he and I got talking, and he said, "Well, who do you portray?" And I said, "William Brown Ide," and his eyes got big. He says, "You're kidding me." And I said, "No, why?" He says, "Because I'm digging in his cabin. I'm an archaeologist, and I'm tracing all of what he did and what the people Lassen did." And we became quite good friends. And about 2 years later, he let us know where the grave of the first and only president of the California Republic was buried. It had a little itty bitty concrete headstone. And I dropped this on, at the time, Brother Holland. And next thing you know, we had a project going. We raised money to the point that they could get the marble. They created a new headstone, which was actually kind of hollow, so they set it over the top of this old one that was there, and a gravestone. And you can look that up, put the name in on the web, and the gravestone looked like a big flag of California. Then the other one listed all the different jobs that he had and titles and everything. And we had a big day up there. We had two congressmen. We had a band. We had all the Mormon battalion guys, our local group, who fired muskets and salute. Real big deal. So that's the primary person that I portray.
My last question is the one that I hope that you guys had a chance to think about. If you could describe your experience that day in one word, what word would that be and why? Okay.
Almost have to repeat what Jerry said. It was very historic and felt a part of something bigger that was going on. Thrilled, enthused, yeah.
All right, Bob.
Well, I had tears in my eyes walking in also. But my word would be historic, because we were in a historic place. We were reenacting a historic thing. And we had just barely found out, and I don't think I remember ever seeing this anywhere, that the temple is right smack on the trail. And I thought that was really cool to learn that. Historic is my word.
Hey, Peter?
Disappointed. I'm all done. I can't play anymore. I was having so much fun. So much fun going all that hiking. Now, I know Kevin thinks I'm crazy, but I just love that hiking and walking that trail and discovering all we did. And I just wasn't really disappointed. I just really excited about finally finishing up that wonderful trek.
It was wonderful. Virginia.
I would say humbling. I had tears in my eyes when I walked in, and it was just overwhelming to think about what they had been through for 2,000 miles, all those months, not enough food, not enough water, walking through the desert, not really knowing what the one day was going to bring after another, not knowing if they were going to be met by Mexican army. Just all of the uncertainty that they had to go through that whole time, and to know that they did arrive, and for the most part, they arrived safely, and that they'd completed the task that they were given to do.
Well, thank you. Is there anything else that anybody thought of that they need to throw in so we can capture it before we sign off that we didn't cover?
I just want to make sure everybody knows there were five women. Okay.
There were.
Everybody's aware of that now, right?
That's correct. There were five women.
And Tyler, in his book, when he's giving the list of all the extra people that went along, references a Mary Agnes Brown. And that's who it was. We still don't understand the Agnes part. And we think it's just because there were multiple Mary Browns traveling with the battalion that she picked up kind of a nom de plume, just a name to identify her separate from the other Mary Browns. But that's who it was. And I'm going to break in here as an aside, going back to arriving and carrying the flag. And I agree that San Diego is a heavy military town between the Marines and the Navy. And I think half of the horn honking was just simply because we were carrying the American flag and people were honoring the flag, not so much us. But Peter, of course, and those of us as guys, you know, we're carrying the flag. It looked kind of, you know, cool and all that kind of stuff. Virginia is so concerned about being period correct that, you know, we offered to let her carry the flag. Oh, I don't think the women would have carried the flag. I can't carry the flag. No, that's not right. No.
Go ahead. Yes, knows.
That was fine.
It wasn't until later I took some trips out to the desert and went to a part with, I went with a couple of other reenactors from San Diego. We took a trip one time out to the, and then I got a chance to see what it was like when they were walking through the desert out there, coming into just the near the border out there where the ranch is. What's his name anyway? When they came into a ranch out there, they have a plaque out there, and they. So I've been on other parts of the Mormon Battalion trek, and it was more like it is. It hasn't changed. But that day is still just one of my all-time best memories.
In episode one, when I shared my memories of walking into Old Town, it was mostly focused on the stress that I was feeling and how nothing felt historic to me. For me, it was a busy time. My mind was definitely focused on what had to be done, not what was happening. But as we walked into Old Town Square, everybody was together, and my dad was sitting there on a little cement wall waiting for us. We all walked around the square once, and then Kevin went over and sat on the wall by my dad while everybody else was milling around, visiting and talking about things, and I was fascinated with Kevin's face. I wanted to understand what he was feeling after he had walked all this while and done all of these things to try to accomplish his goal, but I couldn't put them into words, and so all I did was train the camera on his face and start taking pictures, hoping to try to capture some of those emotions. And in the process of doing that, I was able to get one of the favorite pictures I have of Kevin after the trek sitting on that wall. It shows my quiet, steady husband who had struggled and overcome, and it was the face of the man that I loved.
This has been great, and I know it's very late for you guys. It's later for us, but it's been worth it for sure. But thank you for making time to visit with us and talk about your memories, and it's just great to see you all. And
well, I want to thank you. You've brought back some wonderful memories. I haven't been a part of the Living History program here for about 4 or 5 years, so this is a wonderful blast from the past. So thank you for doing that, for doing all this.
Oh. Thank you. Well, we love you guys. Thanks so much. You have a good night.
Thank you.
We're going to see you in January.
Good night.
Have a Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas. Yes.
Good night, everybody. Bye.
All right.
Good night.
Good night.
Peter, go fix the sprinklers.